House Committee on the Judiciary, Wednesday, May 9th, 2001, 5 p.m., Hearing Room 357.
House Judiciary Committee for our Wednesday evening meeting. We will be relatively quick today. We're going to start at the very bottom of the list with House Bill 3912. Using the revised agenda.
Revision 8?
Yeah, revision 8 of the agenda. It is at the top of the list.
Things change.
Yeah, they do. I wish people would tell me when it happens. House Bill 3912 will open up the session. Council.
House Bill 3912, you've got the dash 2 amendments. You've also got a summary of what the dash 2 amendments do, which is longer than many of the bills that we've passed out of this committee. And the basic gist of it is that it modifies provisions related to organized communities. Representative Williams, you're the carrier.
Yes, I do understand that the Civil Committee, in a unique act of jest and humor, assigned me to carry this bill.
We thought it only appropriate.
Well, just remember, turnabout is fair play. Chair Walker. This is a big bill that has lots of stuff in it.
I like that analysis.
I know that actually the civil subcommittee has worked closely with the condominium working group on the bill, that this has been an involved process, not without some dispute, but that it's also involved the real estate section of the Oregon State Bar that's been involved with the bill. I think the changes that have been testified to in committee are appropriate. Mr. Vile, who's been sort of leading this charge to some degree on behalf of the bar and others, is here with us today. If the committee has any questions, I know that he was there this morning when the bill passed out of the civil sub, and I told him that I didn't think we needed a whole bunch of witnesses who had already testified in the civil sub to come back to this committee and to hold them here for the evening hearing. But he is here, and I'm happy to bring him up if there are members of the full committee that have questions that weren't able to participate in the testimony process in the civil subcommittee, which I think really is Representative Dingfelder, to some degree me, and Representative Krieger. The rest of you, I think, I'll have your chance in the civil subcommittee on this bill.
Chair Williams, I'd like to say that we passed it out this morning without inviting any further testimony, so if they wish to say anything, I would like to extend that invitation.
Okay. Well,
with your permission.
Gentlemen, do you have anything you'd like to add that you haven't testified to with respect to the bill? It's awfully hard, Rich, when you're winning to, you know, would want to come up and, but you're welcome. I mean, if you feel like you want to give any comments on the bill, you're welcome to come up and do that.
It's sort of like when the judge looks over his glasses and says, anything else, counsel?
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I think that we sort of have had this discussion, and I know Representative Backlund, you've been involved in some of these issues, actually, as they've been talked about in the Business and Labor Committee. Is that right? So you have a probably a greater depth of knowledge on condominium issues than you probably ever wanted to have.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have more now than I had at the beginning, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, they violated their own best interests and came up.
We haven't said anything yet. We're just sitting here.
This really is the equivalent of the judge announcing, I'm ruling in your favor, but do you want to keep arguing?
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead. Do you have something you'd like to add?
No, I just want to mention that David Bennett, who actually is much, much older than I am, and is a lawyer who participated in the original drafting of the Planned Community Act, is also here with me, and either of us would be happy to answer questions, but I am going not to violate the rule and be quiet unless you have a question.
And just to let the committee know, there was the bill that went through the business committee was House Bill 2792, and the dash 2 amendments that you have in front of you that replaced the original bill of 3912 address most of the concerns that the proponent of 2792 raised. All of them, I think, except for the fees and the liens for fees due.
Chair Williams, members of the committee, that's correct. The proponent, a homeowner in Central Oregon of 2792, had asked that our statutes be amended to not allow foreclosure for fines, attorney's fees, et cetera, that are related to the operation of a homeowners association. We did not feel that that was appropriate. We've told her that. That, I think, is the only one of the concerns that she raised that's not addressed in this bill.
Any further questions by committee members?
So the bill as it presently exists does allow for foreclosure of those fines?
Well, that law has existed for 20 years. It does. We chose in the discussion with all the various constituencies not to make a change as requested. And yes, fines, fees, attorney's fees that are accrued in connection with that, to the extent that the documents of the project allow for it, can still be included as a common assessment and foreclosed upon if it's not paid.
And this is true not just for anything further. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Chair would move House Bill 3912. The two amendments were adopted, right? As amended to the full committee or to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Beck?
No. Okay. Preparing to say aye.
Oh, good. All right. Call the roll.
Take a deep breath.
Oh, Ackerman's excused. I'm sorry.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Excused.
Representative Wilson?
Excused.
Aye.
Chair Wood. Aye. House Bill 3912, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Backlund, how comfortable would you be carrying this?
The chair's bill.
Well, I like to spread the wealth a little bit.
Trojan horse.
and the reason I say that, Representative Backlund, is because you have had experience sort of with the issue in two committees. Now, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to.
I can do it.
Can you do it?
Yep.
All right. Then Representative Backlund has the bill.
All he's got to say, Mr. Chair, that's a good bill, lots of stuff in it.
Yeah, there you go. It's a good bill, lots of stuff in it. All right. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 3461.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3461 comes to you from Representative Marsh on behalf of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. Eliminates a requirement that sanctions imposed upon probation violators not exceed the maximum number available jail and non-custody units under the Oregon criminal justice rules. Sanctions may not exceed 60 days per violation based on the rules will be adopted by the Department of Corrections. You may remember we had this before us yesterday and we took limited testimony and you said that there'd be an opportunity to take testimony today. And Mr. Dave Koch is here. He's director of Clackamas County Community Corrections and president of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors.
Please come forward, Mr. Koch.
Paul Snyder is here, too, if he is. Yeah.
Well, that's right. It's Cook, isn't it? I got it wrong last time.
Hey, I'm sorry.
You know, if you keep appearing in front of this committee, you're going to change your name to COOK, or at least sign up that way so we get it right.
Yeah, I talked to my grandfather about that before he passed away, and
he said no.
Inclined.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Chair Williams, members of the committee. There's a summary of the bill that we've prepared is available over there. I don't know how many of you have it or have had an opportunity to review it. It summarizes what we had intended to accomplish with this. Essentially, there is a structured sanctioning process that's in administrative rule and referenced in statute, and it applies. Oregon is a national leader in this regard. It applies to felony probationers and offenders on parole and post-prison supervision. Some of the issues have to do with currently the process for sanctioning post-prison supervision and parole cases is just a bit different than that for felony probationers. And what we're seeking with this bill is to align those two processes to make them similar, in fact, identical. Right now, there are 28,000 felony offenders on community supervision in the state. About 18,000 of those are felony probation, 10,000 are on PPS. And as far as the issues with this, it would allow probation and parole officers to have the ability right now with post-prison supervision cases to impose up to 60 sanction units or custody units, and that's with the approval of a hearing officer. In probation, that situation is a little bit different. They are limited to 30 days, and those of you familiar with sentencing guidelines are aware that judges have limits on the number of custody units that can be imposed at sentencing and the number used throughout the period of probation. Typically, that ranges from 2 to 5 years, and that limit is anywhere between 90 and 180 custody units. What we're asking, again, is to align felony probation sanctioning with what occurs with post-prison supervision. And essentially that means if a judge imposes with this limit through probation as an offender violates and a probation officer is sanctioning the person to impact their behavior, once the maximum number are reached during that period of probation, the judge at that point has no option other than to revoke and impose a 180-day sanction. With post-prison supervision cases, we have the ability to sanction throughout the period of post-prison supervision, and there is no limitation on the number of those sanctions that can be imposed. Typically, those range from 0 to 30 days and occasionally up to 60 days. There is no impact on judicial authority as a result of this bill. The court and district attorney are free to depart from the sanction imposed by a probation officer at their discretion. There was a concern potentially about abuse. We have not seen that on the post-prison supervision side. And the discretion that probation and parole officers have in imposing sanctions is limited by the administrative rule and the process we have in place. So they're bound to follow those rules and the guidelines actually set the number of sanctioned units that can be imposed on any offender. This process will assist the local supervisory authority, community corrections, and the sheriff in better managing their custody resources. If you have the ability to impose short-term sanctions on offenders and can avoid moving to revocation quickly, there's a savings, and we can spread out over time 180 sanction units as opposed to a judge reaching a point where revocation has to be imposed. This then also allows the supervising officer to better manage the offender's behavior by, again, our experience and the research literature tell us that by imposing short-term sanctions in response to violation behavior and then linking that up with the appropriate referral to a treatment agency, we can have an impact on whether that person is reoffending. We also believe our experience has been with post-prison supervision revocations that we were able to reduce the number of post-prison supervision revocations by using this a little bit more liberal sanction policy. We estimate we could probably reduce probation revocation hearings and thus impact court and district attorney budgets by about 10% statewide. I think that as I look at this, that's probably all I need to say right now, other than I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Cook? As near as I can tell, Mr. Cook, there isn't anybody who opposes this change. Am I right about that?
That's correct, Chair Williams. We spoke with Phil Lemon of the Criminal Justice Commission. Phil had some concerns. We were able to address those with him to his satisfaction yesterday, so we're not violating any administrative rule or statute.
Okay.
Phil can
the judges are happy with this, Ed?
In judges vary across the state in how they look at sentencing guidelines and also the sanctioning process, and some are very supportive of it, and there are certainly a cadre who are not as excited about sentencing guidelines or the sanctioning process. By and large, I would tell you that probably 85% of the sanctions imposed on probation cases are adopted without change by the court or the district attorney. So I think the system is working, and we've had this in place since 1993.
I will just tell the committee that there hasn't been, I mean, this bill has sort of been percolating for a while, and we had it on the calendar yesterday and today, and I've had actually meetings with some of those people in the in-between time, and no one has suggested to me that anyone opposes the bill. So, we're not. Oh, we are. We are. Yeah, we were. Yeah, go ahead.
I move adopt.
We are now anyway.
House Bill 3461.
All right. Representative Lowell moves the adoption of House Bill 3461.
And that we send it to the floor with a due pass.
With a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on her motion?
Representative
Backlund. Aye.
Representative
Beigel. Aye. Representative Shanley. Aye. Representative Kreger.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3461 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Carrier.
Do you want it, Representative?
I really would love to.
Oh, all right. So, okay.
Since I had to disappoint Mr. Cook once, this made me make up for that.
Thank you, Representative.
Oh, I doubt it. But
Chair Williams, members of the committee, thank you.
It's good to try. Thank you, Mr. Cook. We'll now open a work session on Senate Bill 444.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 444. Comes to you from Senator Metzger, who is in the audience. It requires the Department of Corrections and State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision to adopt rules for determining and acceptable residence for predatory sex offenders and sexually violent dangerous offenders, release from incarceration through probation or parole. It requires the Department of Corrections and State Board of Parole to prohibit predatory sex offenders and sexually violent dangerous offenders from residing near locations where children are the primary occupants and users, and to establish rules for any exceptions to this prohibition.
And we'd assign Representative Kreger to carry the full committee. Representative Kreger.
It's a little bill stuffed full of good, important things.
Good, okay.
I like the bill. What are you laughing at?
No, that's good.
And, I don't think there's a whole lot I can add to it. I've already wrote my floor speech, so I just like to move the bill.
I'm with you, buddy.
I hesitate to not offer Senator Metzger an opportunity to say anything. Obviously,
that's a great bill, I think.
That's a veiled way of saying they didn't really trust us, but I appreciate it. Representative Kreger moves Senate Bill 444A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion?
Sure.
Representative Ringo.
Ms. Blanca.
No.
Yeah, I think the answer is no.
Fiscal. Don't believe the rest. It is. It's not sufficient to say.
Yeah. So it's within the current purview.
Okay.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kreger?
Aye.
Chair Lowe?
Aye.
Chair Williams? Aye. Senate Bill 444 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Kreger to carry.
And our last bill will be Senate Bill 625.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 625 comes to you from Senator Hannon at the request of Michelle Babbitt of Ashland, Oregon. Expands invasion of personal privacy, class A misdemeanor, to prohibit non-consensual observation of a new person for the purposes of arousing or gratifying sexual desire.
And Representative Wilson was the carrier on this bill.
That's
and
right.
He is not here today to report. The testimony that we had was that although there was a law, I believe, passed in the 99 session, was it the 99 or the 97 session, Council, do you recall?
I believe it was last session, Mr. Chairman, this committee.
Law passed which dealt with the issue of recording a person in a place or circumstances where the person had a reasonable expectation of personal privacy. This bill, it did not reach far enough, this bill, I think, directly arose out of some situations where there was non-consensual observation in tanning salons and similar circumstances, that's what the bill is about. It had some limited testimony in the subcommittee. There was no opposition to the bill. Is there any questions?
Well, I have a logic question. And it's just it relates to the language of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
At line 13,
mm-hmm.
The crime the activity that we're making criminal is if you're in a location to observe somebody else in a state of nudity without their consent, and the other person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, it doesn't actually make criminal the act of observing. It's just being in the spot where you can.
Well,
and I'm wondering about the logic of that.
It's being in the spot, but I think you can't ignore the first clause of the sentence, which is, for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire of the person is in the location to observe another person in a state of nudity. So I think you have to be in that location for the purpose of arousing or gratifying your sexual desire.
So without going to the ridiculous.
Please don't.
It's too late. Here we go. Are you ready? So would it be criminal if a guy is standing outside
smoking a cigarette?
The shower. Shut up. Excuse me. Standing outside but not looking. If just being there is enough to make I'm excited about standing there. So, I don't know. It just seems like we're not defining the bad behavior.
Well, I think the problem they've got, it's sort of one of those common sense problems here, is that it's making the person who is in the location to observe that activity criminal. If it's clear that their intent was is to deal with the issue where you can't necessarily prove that they were at that particular moment actually observing. Now I'll try my hypothetical. The guy that you catch in the ceiling panels of above the women's dressing room in a department store with his pants down around his knees, but you haven't actually been able to see him watch somebody, would be potentially subject to this bill. They were in the location, and you've got a pretty reasonable suspicion that they were there for the purpose of arousing or gratifying their sexual desire based on possible evidence, but you maybe didn't see them actually look at a nude person. I think they get caught in that web, and I think that's sort of an appropriate limitation. I'm just telling you, that's the kind of thing this bill is frankly attempting to address. And I think if you make it the test that you have to actually get them observing the other person in the state of nudity, that means you sort of got to catch them absolutely red-handed.
So there's no defense of, I was there, but I didn't really look. Doesn't work.
Well, it does unless you can prove that it was for the purpose, you know, they've also got to prove that it was for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire.
And that they observed.
And if they were in the location where they could have observed.
You don't have to prove that they were observing. See, that's the problem.
It's knowingly observed.
I don't see where you're reading, Charlie.
Line 13 says to observe.
Chair Morgan, these are critical questions.
Where the person is in a location to observe another person in a state of nudity without the consent of the other person and the other person is in a place and circumstance where the person has a reasonable expectation of personal privacy.
I was not looking at the engrossed.
Oh, okay. I think they did, and I think it's to address the very problem that I have, which is that the very problem that I am referencing still.
You have this problem?
Oh, man.
Time to vote.
You know, we're having... Unfortunately, it would take too long to get to the punchline to make that in the cyanide tape, but that would have been a good one.
Your blood sugar's dropping.
Well, you know, what's great about this committee is we do it all here.
Chickens, whatever. Not proud.
No.
Do we have other salient comments about Senate Bill 625?
Representative
Ringo.
I think this is a very worthy bill, but I would like to see us spend more time on the problem of guns in schools.
Appreciate you making that comment, Representative Ringo.
Guns in schools?
Thank you,
All right. The chair would move Senate Bill 625 amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Call the roll, Shannon.
Aye.
Representative
Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative
Ringo?
So. There doesn't require removing whole systems.
Aye.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frieden?
No, I guess.
Chair Williams?
Although I do like the bill. Excuse me.
Chair Williams?
King Zach.
How do I go about being overlaying that on this? Madam Chair, if you went into the DEQ website, you couldn't do it.
Is that a recess motion, Chair?
Yeah.
Is that a recess motion?
We're going to be at ease for a minute.
I am not getting crowded.
No, sir, I bet one of our policy packages is on the
Well, I wouldn't say that we're at ease. Okay. Yes, of course. Sure. Let me know.
Was my motion.
And staff, so it's no longer the Nestor Shetterly bill, but it is our bill.
Right.
So, capitalize it and you the person that maybe didn't use that.
You bet. I'd love to. Let me know. Okay, thanks, Rick.
Right. See you later.
Check with Ryan. I see that's right.
Brian?
Based on an earlier conversation that it was, I'm going to...
There was a surprise based on an earlier conversation.
Well, there was a suggestion. Turn the thing off, would you?
Mr. Chair, I realize that we're in the middle of our vote on Senate Bill 625A, and I have erroneously voted nay. I intend to vote aye on this. I would appreciate an opportunity to recast my vote.
So Representative Lowe votes aye. Representative Williams is the last vote. Representative Williams votes aye.
Fair.
Bill passes. Senate Bill 625A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, Representative Wilson to carry. We are adjourned.
And you will find it on page 464 in your big budget book. This package is in there for support of the program policy packages that are contained in this budget request. If all of those packages are approved, this is what we would need in agency management in order to provide infrastructure and central services for the increased load. If a portion of those packages are approved, then this package could and should be reduced accordingly. So it's a response to workload in the other packages. Madam Chair,
We are finished, and I would just say one thing in conclusion, and then maybe we can talk with Mr. Rocco about what the rest of the week might look like. But you'll see on the page 93 in your book, the same themes that I stated at the beginning of this presentation, and I would just close by repeating those. These were not written by anybody on my staff. These were written by me, and these are things that I believe in very strongly, and I became the director in November, and I hope that I'm going to have the opportunity in the coming months and years to fulfill all of them. I am committed to excellence, and I did give you some examples of some process improvement initiatives that I'm already starting. I am committing to solving problems, not just running programs, hence my commitment to the community solutions team approach that you heard about quite a bit.